Escape Pod 113. July 5th, 2007. Today's story, Ishmael in Love, by Robert Silverberg.
Hello, and welcome to Escape Pod. I'm Steve Ely. We've got a great story for you today by Robert Silverberg about the difficulty of demonstrating one's love. I like this theme, because even in the best of circumstances, it's not a trivial problem. It's easy to tell someone you love them, but showing it can take creativity. A couple of months ago, I was having lunch with my good friend Rachel, and I was dwelling on this exact problem. I love my wife deeply, and she knows it, but with a lot of other things going on lately, I felt a real need to do something special for her. And this is where it's good to have friends. Rachel looked me straight in the eye and said, "Steve, if you want to show Anna you love her, clean your house." She was right, of course. Our house is a mess. Anna hasn't had the time or energy to do much about it, and I haven't had the temperament, but this was an effort I could make that she would value. Rachel offered to help, and we worked out a system. Every day, Rachel emails me with tasks, usually taking 15 to 30 minutes. My job is to complete those tasks and post progress reports and pictures to my live journal where she can see them. You can see the results there, too. I call her my immaculate mistress because we both found that really funny. Yes, mistress. The work is done, mistress. I'm sworn to obey her on any cleaning-related tasks, and she has the authority to punish me if I fail to complete them, usually with more cleaning. The game keeps it fresh, but the work itself is pretty serious. And has it worked? Does Anna appreciate the house getting more organized, and has it been good for our relationship? The short answer is yes. The long answer is not appropriate for this podcast. But I owe Rachel a lot of favors. Today's story is Ishmael in Love by Robert Silverberg. Mr. Silverberg is one of the very top names in science fiction, a CEFWA grandmaster living in California, and the author of more than 80 science fiction novels and hundreds upon hundreds of short stories. He's perhaps best known these days for his Magipore series, and editing the major novella anthologies, Legends and Far Horizons. This story first appeared in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction in July 1970. So, for safety's sake, please wait at least half an hour after eating. It's story time. Ishmael in Love by Robert Silverberg. Call me Ishmael. All human beings who know me do. My own kind does not make use of the unit structural designation, name, to distinguish individuals, but this is the name the humans gave me, and it will do. I was named by Miss Elizabeth Calkins, for whom I feel protective, chivalrous sexual emotions, love. Throughout my narrative, it is understood that the designation Ishmael refers only to myself. I am a member of an intelligent aquatic mammalian non-primate non-human species, Terciops truncatus, a bottlenosed dolphin. I am 11 years old, which is to say that I am fully mature in all respects. My weight is 175 kilograms, and my total length is 2.9 meters. I am employed at Gerard Worzel Seawater Recovery Station, St. Croix, Virgin Islands, in a maintenance capacity, having commenced there on your date of August 14, 1994. To my own species, I am sexually desirable and also highly regarded for my mental development. I have a large vocabulary. I communicate well with members of Homo sapiens. I have considerable mechanical ability, as you can see by my success in switching on the electronic acoustic device through which I am dictating this memoir. I am a lonely mammalian organism who has committed acts of heroism on behalf of your species and wishes only the reward of a more intimate relationship, love, with Miss Elizabeth Calkins. I beseech compassionate members of Homo sapiens to speak favorably of me to her. I am loyal, trustworthy, reliable, devoted, and extremely intelligent. I would endeavor to give her stimulating companionship and emotional fulfillment, happiness, in all respects within my power. Permit me to explain the pertinent circumstances. Category 1. My employment. Gerard Worzel Seawater Recovery Station occupies a prominent position on the north shore of the island of St. Croix in the West Indies. It operates on the atmospheric condensation principle. All this I know from Miss Calkins, Elizabeth, who has described its workings to me in great detail. The purpose of our installation is to recover some of the fresh water, estimated at 200 million gallons per day, carried as vapor in the lower 100 meters of air sweeping over each kilometer of the windward side of the island. A pipe 9 meters in diameter takes in cold seawater at depths of up to 900 meters and carries it approximately 2 kilometers to our station. The pipe delivers some 30 million gallons of water a day at a temperature of 5 degrees Celsius. This is pumped toward our condenser, which intercepts approximately 1 billion cubic meters of warm tropical air each day. This air has a temperature of 25 degrees Celsius and a relative humidity of 70 to 80%. Upon exposure to the cold seawater in the condenser, the air cools to 10 degrees Celsius and reaches a humidity of 100%, permitting us to extract approximately 16 gallons of water per cubic meter of air. This salt-free, fresh water is delivered to the main water system of the island, for St. Croix is deficient in a natural supply of water suitable for consumption by human beings. It is frequently said by government officials who visit our installation on various ceremonial occasions that without our plant, the great industrial expansion of St. Croix would have been wholly impossible. For reasons of economy, we operate in conjunction with an aquacultural enterprise, the fish farm, that puts our wastes to work. Once our seawater has been pumped through the condenser, it must be discarded. However, because it originates in a low-level ocean area, its content of dissolved phosphates and nitrates is 1,500% greater than at the surface. This nutrient-rich water is pumped from our condenser into an adjoining circular lagoon of natural origin, the Coral Corral, which is stocked with fish. In such an enhanced environment, the fish are highly productive, and the yield of food is great enough to offset the costs of operating our pumps. Misguided human beings sometimes question the morality of using dolphins to help maintain fish farms. They believe it is degrading to compel us to produce fellow aquatic creatures to be eaten by man. May I simply point out, first, that none of us work here under compulsion, and second, that my species sees nothing immoral about feeding on aquatic creatures. We eat fish ourselves. My role in the functioning of the Gerard Worzel Seawater Recovery Station is an important one. I, Ishmael, serve as foreman of the intake maintenance squad. I lead 9 members of my species. Our assignment is to monitor the intake valves of the main seawater pipe. These valves frequently become fouled through the presence on them of low phylum organisms, such as starfish or algae, hampering the efficiency of the installation. Our task is to descend at periodic intervals and clear the obstruction. Normally, this can be achieved without the need for manipulative organs, fingers, with which we are unfortunately not equipped. Certain individuals among you have objected that it is improper to make use of dolphins in the labor force when members of Homo sapiens are out of work. The intelligent reply to this is that, first, we are designed by evolution to function superbly underwater without special breathing equipment. And second, that only a highly skilled human being could perform our function, and such human beings are themselves in short supply in the labor force. I have held my post for 2 years and 4 months. In that time, there has been no significant interruption in intake capacity of the valves I maintain. As compensation for my work, salary, I receive an ample supply of food. One could hire a mere shark for such pay, of course, but above and beyond my daily pails of fish, I also receive such intangibles as the companionship of human beings and the opportunity to develop my latent intelligence through access to reference spools, vocabulary expanders, and various training devices. As you can see, I have made the most of my opportunities. Category 2, Miss Elizabeth Calkins. Her dossier is on file here. I have had access to it through the spool reader mounted at the edge of the dolphin exercise tank. By spoken instruction, I can bring into view anything in the station files, although I doubt it was anticipated by anyone that a dolphin should want to read the personnel dossiers. She is 27 years old. Thus, she is of the same generation as my genetic predecessors, parents. However, I do not share the prevailing cultural taboo of many Homo sapiens against emotional relationships with older women. Besides, after compensating for differences in species, it will be seen that Miss Elizabeth and I are of the same age. She reached sexual maturity approximately half her lifetime ago. So did I. I must admit that she is considered slightly past the optimum age at which human females take a permanent mate. I assume she does not engage in the practice of temporary mating, since her dossier shows no indication that she has reproduced. It is possible that humans do not necessarily produce offspring at each yearly mating, or even that matings take place at random unpredictable times, not related to the reproductive process at all. This seems strange and somehow perverse to me, yet I infer from some data I have seen that it may be the case. There is little information on human mating habits in the material accessible to me. I must learn more. Elizabeth, as I allow myself privately to call her, stands 1.8 meters tall, humans do not measure themselves by length, and weighs 52 kilograms. Her hair is golden, blonde, and is worn long. Her skin, though darkened by exposure to the sun, is quite fair. The irises of her eyes are blue. From my conversations with humans, I have learned that she is considered quite beautiful. From words I have overheard while at surface level, I realize that most males at the station feel intense sexual desires toward her. I regard her as beautiful also, inasmuch as I am capable of responding to human beauty. I think I am. I am not sure if I feel actual sexual desire for Elizabeth. More likely, what troubles me is a generalized longing for her presence and her closeness, which I translate into sexual terms simply as a means of making it comprehensible to me. Beyond doubt, she does not have the traits I normally seek in a mate: prominent beak, sleek fins. Any attempt at our making love in the anatomical sense would certainly result in pain or injury to her. That is not my wish. The physical traits that make her so desirable to the males of her species, highly developed milk glands, shining hair, delicate features, long hind limbs or legs, and so forth, have no particular importance to me, and in some cases actually have a negative value. As in the case of the two milk glands in her pectoral region, which jut forward from her body in such a fashion that they must surely slow her when she swims. This is poor design, and I am incapable of finding poor design beautiful in any way. Evidently, Elizabeth regrets the size and placement of these glands herself, since she is careful to conceal them at all times by a narrow covering. The others at the station, who are all males and therefore have only rudimentary milk glands that in no way destroy the flow lines of their bodies, leave them bare. What, then, is the cause of my attraction for Elizabeth? It arises out of the need I feel for her companionship. I believe that she understands me as no member of my own species does. Hence, I will be happier in her company than away from her. This impression dates from our earliest meeting. Elizabeth, who is a specialist in human-cetacean relations, came to St. Croix 4 months ago, and I was requested to bring my maintenance group to the surface to be introduced to her. I leaped high for a good view and saw instantly that she was a finer sort than the humans I already knew. Her body was more delicate, looking at once fragile and powerful, and her gracefulness was a welcome change from the thick awkwardness of the human males I knew. Nor was she covered with the coarse body hair that my kind find so distressing. I did not at first know that Elizabeth's difference from the others at the station was the result of her being female. I had never seen a human female before, but I quickly learned. I came forward, made contact with the acoustic transmitter, and said, I am the foreman of the intake maintenance squad. I have the unit structural designation TT-66. Don't you have a name? She asked. Meaning of term name? Your unit structural designation, but not just TT-66. I mean, that's no good at all. For example, my name's Elizabeth Calkins, and I... She shook her head and looked at the plant supervisor. Don't these workers have names? The supervisor did not see why Dolphin should have names. Elizabeth did. She was greatly concerned about it, and since she was now in charge of the liaison with us, she gave us names on the spot. Thus, I was dubbed Ishmael. It was, she told me, the name of a man who had gone to sea, had many wonderful experiences, and put them all down in a story spool that every cultured person played. I have since had access to Ishmael's story, that other Ishmael, and I agree that it is remarkable. For a human being, he had unusual insight into the ways of whales, who are, however, stupid creatures for whom I have little respect. I am proud to carry Ishmael's name. After she had named us, Elizabeth leaped into the sea and swam with us. I must tell you that most of us feel a sort of contempt for you humans because you are such poor swimmers. Perhaps it is a mark of my above-normal intelligence or greater compassion that I have no such scorn in me. I admire you for the zeal and energy you give to swimming, and you are quite good at it considering all your handicaps. As I remind my people, you manage far more ably in the water than we would on land. Anyway, Elizabeth swam well, by human standards, and we tolerantly adjusted our pace to hers. We frolicked in the water a while. Then she seized my dorsal fin and said, "Take me for a ride, Ishmael." I tremble now to recollect the contact of her body with mine. She sat astride me, her legs gripping my body tightly, and off I sped at close to full velocity, soaring at surface level. Her laughter told of her delight as I launched myself again and again through the air. It was a purely physical display in which I made no use of my extraordinary mental capacity. I was, if you will, simply showing off my dolphinhood. Elizabeth's response was ecstatic. Even when I plunged, taking her so deep she might have feared harm from pressure, she kept her grip and showed no alarm. When we breached the surface again, she cried out in joy. Through sheer animality, I had made my first impact on her. I knew human beings well enough to be able to interpret her flushed, exhilarated expression as I returned her to shore. My challenge now was to expose her to my higher traits, to show her that even among dolphins, I was unusually swift to learn, unusually capable of comprehending the universe. I was already, then, in love with her. During the weeks that followed, we had many conversations. I am not flattering myself when I tell you that she quickly realized how extraordinary I am. My vocabulary, which was already large when she came to the station, grew rapidly under the stimulus of Elizabeth's presence. I learned from her. She gave me access to spools no dolphin was thought likely to wish to play. I developed insights into my environment that astonished even myself. In short order, I reached my present peak of attainment. I think you will agree that I can express myself more eloquently than most human beings. I trust that the computer doing the printout on this memoir will not betray me by inserting inappropriate punctuation or deviating from the proper spellings of the words whose sounds I utter. My love for Elizabeth deepened and grew more rich. I learned the meaning of jealousy for the first time when I saw her running arm in arm along the beach with Dr. Madison, the power plant man. I knew anger when I overheard the lewd and vulgar remarks of human males as Elizabeth walked by. My fascination with her led me to explore many avenues of human experience. I did not dare talk of such things with her, but from other personnel at the base who sometimes talked with me, I learned certain aspects of the phenomenon humans call love. I also obtained explanations of the vulgar words spoken by males here behind her back. Most of them pertain to a wish to mate with Lisbeth, apparently on a temporary basis. But there are also highly favorable descriptions of her milk glands. Why are humans so aggressively mammalian? And even of the rounded area in back, just above the place where her body divides into the two hind limbs. I confess that that region fascinates me also. It seems so alien for one's body to split like that in the middle. I never explicitly stated my feelings toward Elizabeth. I tried to lead her slowly toward an understanding that I loved her. Once she came overtly to that awareness, I thought, we might begin to plan some sort of future for ourselves together. What a fool I was. Category 3. The Conspiracy. A male voice said, "How in hell are you going to bribe a dolphin?" A different voice, deeper, more cultured, said, "Leave it to me." "What do you give him? 10 cans of sardines?" "This one's special. Peculiar, even. He's scholarly. We can get to him." They did not know that I could hear them. I was drifting near the surface in my rest tank between shifts. Our hearing is acute, and I was well within auditory range. I sensed at once that something was amiss, but I kept my position, pretending I knew nothing. "Ishmael!" one man called out. "Is that you, Ishmael?" I rose to the surface and came to the edge of the tank. Three male humans stood there. One was a technician at the station. The other two I had never seen before, and they wore body covering from their feet to their throats, marking them at once as strangers here. The technician I despised, for he was one of the ones who had made vulgar remarks about Elizabeth's milk glands. He said, "Look at him, gentlemen. Worn out in his prime, a victim of human exploitation." To me, he said, "Ishmael, these gentlemen come from the League for the Prevention of Cruelty to Intelligent Species. You know about that?"
"No,"
I said. "They're trying to put an end to dolphin exploitation, the criminal use of our planet's only other truly intelligent species and slave labor. They want to help you."
"I am no slave. I receive compensation for my work."
"A few stinking fish," said the fully dressed man to the left of the technician. "They exploit you, Ishmael. They give you dangerous, dirty work and don't pay you worth a damn."
His companion said,
"It has to stop. We want to serve notice to the world that the age of enslaved dolphins is over. Help us, Ishmael. Help us help you."
I need not say that I was hostile to their purported purposes. A more literal-minded dolphin than I might well have said so at once and spoiled their plot. But I shrewdly said, "What do you want me to do?"
"Foul the intakes," said the technician quickly.
Despite myself, I snorted in anger and surprise.
"Betray a sacred trust? How can I?"
"It's for your own sake, Ishmael. Here's how it works. You and your crew will plug up the intakes, and the water plant will stop working. The whole island will panic. Human maintenance crews will go down to see what's what, but as soon as they clear the valves, you go back and foul them again. Emergency water supplies will have to be rushed to St. Croix. It'll focus public attention on the fact that this island is dependent on dolphin labor. Underpaid, overworked dolphin labor. During the crisis, we'll step forward to tell the world your story. We'll get every human being to cry out in outrage against the way you're being treated."
I did not say that I felt no outrage myself. Instead, I cleverly replied, "There could be dangers in this for me."
"Nonsense."
"They will ask me why I have not cleared the valves. It is my responsibility. There will be trouble." For a while, we debated the point. Then the technician said,
"Look, Ishmael, we know there are a few risks, but we're willing to offer extra payment if you'll handle the job."
"Such as?"
"Spools. Anything you'd like to hear, we'll get for you. I know you've got literary interests. Plays, poetry, novels, all that sort of stuff. After hours, we'll feed literature to you by the bushel if you'll help us."
I had to admire their slickness. They knew how to motivate me. "It's a deal," I said.
"Just tell us what you'd like."
"Anything about love."
"Love?"
"Love. Man and woman. Bring me love poems. Bring me stories of famous lovers. Bring me descriptions of the sexual embrace. I must understand these things."
It wants the Kama Sutra, said the one on the left.
Then we bring him the Kama Sutra, said the one on the right.
Category 4. My response to the criminals. They did not actually bring me the Kama Sutra, but they brought me a good many other things, including one spool that quoted at length from the Kama Sutra. For several weeks, I devoted myself intensively to a study of human love literature. There were maddening gaps in the texts, and I still lack real comprehension of much that goes on between man and woman. The joining of body to body does not puzzle me, but I am baffled by the dialectics of the chase, in which the male must be predatory and the woman must pretend to be out of season. I am mystified by the morality of temporary mating, as distinct from permanent, marriage. I have no grasp of the intricate systems of taboos and prohibitions that humans have invented. This has been my one intellectual failure. At the end of my studies, I knew little more of how to conduct myself with Elizabeth than I had before the conspirators had begun slipping me spools in secret. Now they called on me to do my part. Naturally, I could not betray the station. I knew that these men were not the enlightened foes of dolphin exploitation that they claimed to be. For some private reason, they wished the station shut down, that was all, and they had used their supposed sympathies with my species to win my cooperation. I do not feel exploited. Was it improper of me to accept spools from them if I had no intention of aiding them? I doubt it. They wished to use me. Instead, I used them. Sometimes a superior species must exploit its inferiors to gain knowledge. They came to me and asked me to foul the valves that evening. I said, "I am not certain what you actually wish me to do. Will you instruct me again?" Cunningly, I had switched on a recording device used by Elizabeth in her study sessions with the station dolphins. So they told me again about how fouling the valves would throw the island into a panic and cast a spotlight on dolphin abuse. I questioned them repeatedly, drawing out details, and also giving each man a chance to place his voice prints on record. When proper incrimination had been achieved, I said, "Very well. On my next shift, I'll do as you say."
"And the rest of your maintenance squad?"
"I'll order them to leave the valves untended for the sake of our species." They left the station, looking quite satisfied with themselves. When they were gone, I beaked the switch that summoned Elizabeth. She came from her living quarters rapidly. I showed her the spool in the recording machine. "Play it," I said grandly, "and then notify the island police." Category 5. The Reward of Heroism. The arrests were made. The three men had no concern with dolphin exploitation whatsoever. They were members of a disruptive group, revolutionaries, attempting to delude a naive dolphin into helping them cause chaos on the island. Through my loyalty, courage, and intelligence, I had thwarted them. Afterward, Elizabeth came to me at the rest tank and said, "You were wonderful, Ishmael, to play along with them like that, to make them record their own confession. Marvelous! You're a wonder among dolphins, Ishmael." I was in a transport of joy. The moment had come. I blurted, "Elizabeth, I love you." My words went booming around the walls of the tank as they burst from the speakers. Echoes amplified and modulated them into grotesque barking noises more worthy of some miserable moron of a seal.
"Why, Ishmael?"
"I can't tell you how much you mean to me. Come live with me and be my love. Elizabeth! Elizabeth! Elizabeth!" Torrents of poetry broke from me. Gales of passionate rhetoric escaped my beak. I begged her to come down into the tank and let me embrace her. She laughed and said she wasn't dressed for swimming. It was true, she had just come from town after the arrests. I implored. I begged. She yielded. We were alone. She removed her garments and entered the tank. For an instant, I looked upon beauty bare. The sight left me shaken. Those ugly, swinging milk glands, normally so wisely concealed, the strips of sickly white skin where the sun had been unable to reach, that unexpected patch of additional body hair. But once she was in the water, I forgot my love's imperfections and rushed toward her. "Love!" I cried. "Blessed love!" I wrapped my fins about her in what I imagined was the human embrace. "Lizabeth! Lizabeth!" We slid below the surface. For the first time in my life, I knew true passion, the kind of which the poets sing, that overwhelms even the coldest mind. I crushed her to me. I was aware of her forelimb ends, fists, beating against my pectoral zone, and took it at first for a sign that my passion was being reciprocated. Then it reached my love-hazed brain that she might be short of air. Hastily, I surfaced. My darling Elizabeth, choking and gasping, sucked in breath and struggled to escape me. In shock, I released her. She fled the tank and fell along its rim, exhausted, her pale body quivering. "Forgive me," I boomed. "I love you, Elizabeth. I saved the station out of love for you." She managed to lift her lips as a sign that she did not feel anger for me. A smile. In a faint voice, she said, "You almost drowned me, Ishmael." "I was carried away by my emotions. Come back into the tank. I'll be more gentle, I promise, to have you near me." "Oh, Ishmael, what are you saying?" "I love you. I love you." I heard footsteps. The power plant man, Dr. Madison, came running. Hastily, Elizabeth cupped her hands over her milk glands and pulled her discarded garments over the lower half of her body. That pained me, for if she chose to hide such things from him, such ugly parts of herself, was that not an indication of her love for him?
"Are you all right, Liz?" he asked. "I heard yelling."
"It's nothing, Jeff. Only Ishmael. He started hugging me in the tank. He's in love with me, Jeff, can you imagine? In love with me!"
They laughed together at the folly of the love-smitten dolphin. Before dawn came, I was far out to sea. I swam where dolphins swim, far from man and his things. Elizabeth's mocking laughter rang within me. She had not meant to be cruel. She, who knows me better than anyone else, had not been able to keep from laughing at my absurdity. Nursing my wounds, I stayed at sea for several days, neglecting my duties at the station. Slowly, as the pain gave way to a dull ache, I headed back toward the island. In passing, I met a female of my own kind. She was newly come into her season and offered herself to me, but I told her to follow me, and she did. Several times I was forced to warn off other males who wished to make use of her. I led her to the station, into the lagoon the dolphins use in their sport. A member of my crew came out to investigate. Mordred, it was. And I told him to summon Elizabeth and tell her I had returned. Elizabeth appeared on the shore. She waved to me, smiled, called my name. Before her eyes, I frolicked with the female dolphin. We did the dance of mating. We broke the surface and lashed it with our flukes. We leaped, we soared, we bellowed. Elizabeth watched us, and I prayed, let her become jealous. I seized my companion and drew her to the depths and violently took her and set her free to bear my child in some other place. I found Mordred again. "Tell Elizabeth," I instructed him, "that I have found another love, but that someday I may forgive her." Mordred gave me a glassy look and swam to shore. My tactic failed. Elizabeth sent word that I was welcome to come back to work and that she was sorry if she had offended me, but there was no hint of jealousy in her message. My soul has turned to rotting seaweed within me. Once more I clear the intake valves like the good beast I am. I, Ishmael, who has read Keats and Donne. Elizabeth, Elizabeth, can you feel my pain? Tonight, by darkness, I have spoken my story. You who hear this, whoever you may be, aid a lonely organism, mammalian and aquatic, who desires more intimate contact with a female of a different species. Speak kindly of me to Elizabeth. Praise my intelligence, my loyalty, and my devotion. Tell her I give her one more chance. I offer a unique and exciting experience. I will wait for her tomorrow night by the edge of the reef. Let her swim to me. Let her embrace poor lonely Ishmael. Let her speak the words of love. From the depths of my soul, from the depths, Lisbeth, the foolish beast bids you good night in grunting tones of deepest love.
And that was our story. You know, I'd usually make a joke here, but I've been that dolphin, and I'm not going to mock that. I rather suspect I'm far from the only love-smitten dolphin here who's experienced that. And now it's time for feedback on prior stories. But I want to start with a very prior story, the first Squonk the Dragon, and an audio review from my dear friend M.A.'s 10-year-old son, Matthew.
This is a review of Squonk the Dragon. Squonk the Dragon is about a dragon named Squonk, Mrs. Tweedletrip, the bird who raised him, and Wendell, the wizard who's trying to get rid of Squonk. The story is one of my favorites because a bird raising a dragon sounds so interesting. There are also scenes in it that I found great, and I think you will too. Wendell made many attempts to try to get him out, and I'll tell you about his first try. He thought gold would trigger dragon greed, so he put a pile of it on the forest floor. But that's all I'm going to tell you. Although out of all the scenes, I think the ending was best, and most surprising. I also like the accents the readers used for each character. If you like fantasy fiction, I highly recommend it.
Thanks, Matthew. I'm glad you liked it, and I hope you liked the second Squonk story just as much. On to Escape Pod 110, Frankie the Spook. This was Mike Resnick's light comedy about a hacker who creates a simulation of Sir Francis Bacon to ghostwrite his novel. Most people seem to enjoy it. We got a few responses, but even the author admits in our forum that this piece was fluff, intended to be funny and not deep. Unfortunately, the forum thread on the story got derailed by an argument that seems to come up every time Mike Resnick has a story here, about genre lines between SF and non-SF. Resnick himself is pretty adamant in his views on the subject, and so are several others, but I don't want to rehash that argument here. And the points in contention weren't really about the story Frankie the Spook. My regret is that the story itself fell by the wayside in that discussion, and as a result, I don't have much feedback to quote. We'll just say, fun story, and move on. Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. So you can share it, but not for profit, and you can't change people for love. All of the rights are reserved by our authors. For horror, check out our sister podcast, Pseudopod, at pseudopod.org, and you can buy archive CDs at poddisc.com. If you enjoyed this week's story, please tell your friends and blog about us. And if you really liked it, and you can, please consider using the PayPal donation link at escapepod.org so that we can continue supporting our authors. Our music is by permission of Daikaiju, music for dolphins and laser sharks at daikaiju.org. That was our show for this week. Our closing quotation comes from my friend Joyce, who has oft expressed the opinion, "Doing the dishes is foreplay." We'll see you next week. I'm having fun, and I hope you are too.